Hello and welcome in to the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean, and welcome back, college football. Really could not have asked for a better way to ring in the 2024 season. Hope everyone enjoyed the long Labor Day weekend and is recovering okay, returning back to work this week. But we got college football back in just a few days. It's the beauty of football season. We are really never bored, and we have a jam-packed episode today. Before I dive into today's content, just want to give a little bit of a preview of what you can expect from the Big Ten Blitz throughout the 2024 season. And we're really making it more simplistic this season. Really only going to have two segments recapping the week's action. We're not necessarily going game by game, not giving out awards, just giving you the main bullet points, assuming you didn't watch any Big Ten games. We're going to give you the information you need to feel like you did. And then our second segment, looking forward to the weekend ahead, breaking down the games that I'm most excited for and telling you what we should be watching for. I'm not going to be doing our betting picks in the podcast this year. If you're interested in our betting content, check out the Big Ten Betting Guide, which is posted on our website, thefloorslap.com. And if you follow us on Twitter, at thefloorslap, we tweet out that article as well as a lot of other picks. So if you're looking for betting content, we still have plenty of it at the Floor Slap. But this podcast is going to be strictly recapping and... previewing the Big Ten football games. And with that, I think we can dive in today. So how I want to recap week one, because there were so many takeaways. I think so many teams had such impressive performances and a few other teams had surprisingly disappointing performances. There is a lot I want to cover. I'm just going to go through 10 quick hitters, 10 teams, a sentence recapping what I saw, and a quick breakdown. Hopefully can get through 10 key points for 10 teams in 10 minutes. But before I get into that, I do want to mention what I think was the overarching theme for the Big Ten in opening weekend, and that was the impressive quarterback play and really improved quarterback play compared to what we've seen out of the Big Ten outside of Ohio State for really the entire college football playoff era and even going back further than that. I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I think part of the reason why the Big Ten's perception is so much different than the SEC, because the reality is that there is not a huge difference between the Big Ten and the SEC. It's those two conferences and everyone else. But I think a lot of people, especially the more casual college football fans, tend to think it's the SEC and a huge gap, and the Big Ten is down there with the Big 12 and the ACC. And that's just not the case. And I think part of the reason the Big Ten's perception is what it is has been because of quarterback play, been because Big Ten offenses are traditionally and still are built from the line of scrimmage out. The key for Big Ten teams is to control the line of scrimmage and win the game that way. And it's not always pretty. It very often isn't, but that's how the Big Ten has always been. And so you're not going to see a lot of 50-yard touchdown passes. You're not going to see a lot of 400-yard passing games. You're not going to see a lot of first-round quarterbacks come out of the Big Ten. And I think to casual college football fans, those big plays, those high-scoring matchups are what determines quality teams. And if you really know college football or football in general, that's not the case. But I think the Big Ten having a more conservative offensive approach and not consistently generating first-round quarterbacks has led people to have the perception they do about the conference. But I think things are about to change in a big way, because it's dangerous to overreact to 1 week, but the quarterback play I saw across the conference was better than I have seen maybe ever in the Big Ten. It was the norm to have a great quarterback performance out of the Big Ten this weekend. You know, typically it's only maybe a handful of great quarterback performances we'll see in the Big Ten every weekend, and the rest are just, you know, pretty disappointing. But that wasn't the case this weekend. The vast majority of Big Ten teams had some really impressive performances. Miller Moss played arguably the best game any quarterback did in week one. Tremendous ball placement, clutch when it mattered, great performance. Hudson Card at Purdue, you can tell how much more comfortable he is in his second year of this offense. Threw only one incompletion to four touchdowns. Luke Altmyer from Illinois had another great game, showed really the arm talent he has and the kind of underrated athlete he is and the kind of quarterback he can be when he finally has time to drop back. Will Howard had a really impressive outing. Dylan Raiola, true freshman, opened up his college career with a bang, had a few Patrick Mahomes-esque like throws, dare I say it. Dylan Gabriel for Oregon, we all knew he was going to be great. And even though Oregon as a whole kind of disappointed, it was not on Dylan Gabriel. He played really well. Drew Aller at Penn State tore up West Virginia. Billy Edwards replacing Talia Tungavaiola at Maryland. He had a great game. He had over 10 yards attempt and proved to be a much better pocket passer than I really thought he was. And even Ethan Calicmanis, who transferred from Minnesota to Rutgers, his receivers didn't do him very much justice. There was a lot of bad routes, a lot of dropped passes in that game. But he had 3 touchdowns, no turnovers, and ended the game with, I think it was like 10 straight completions. He looked a lot more comfortable. I didn't even talk about Will Rogers, who had an efficient game for Washington. Curtis Rourke for Indiana. He was like a point guard, getting the ball out very quick and was very accurate within 10 yards. Tyler Van Dyke at Wisconsin. He had an up and down game, but he had a few plays that really made me hold my breath and think that, wow, the Wisconsin really found something with him. Mike Wright at Northwestern, a dual threat. He had 65 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown in their win over Miami of Ohio. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit here, but really my point is there was great performance after great performance from the quarterback position in the Big Ten, and that's the biggest takeaway, and I think this can be something we expect out of the conference moving forward. Anyway, I'm going to get into my 10 quick hitters from the past weekend. On the first team, Oregon. Did the offensive line have a bad game, or is it a sign of things to come? They beat Idaho 24-14, even though they were 45-point favorites. And if you look at the box score, you might wonder how that game was close. The defense played really, really well for Oregon, with the exception of a few plays where they fell asleep. And like I said before, Dylan Gabriel looked really good and kept this offense afloat. It was Oregon's offensive line that got dominated from the beginning of the game. They came up short in a lot of short yardage situations. They let Dylan Gabriel get sacked a handful of times, one of which resulted in a fumble. And I projected Oregon's offensive line to be one of the best in the Big Ten, one of the best in the country, and they did not play up to it whatsoever. Against an Idaho team, they were 45-point favorites over. So I'm really interested to see this weekend if that was just a bad game, or if they struggle again, it looks like that would be a sign of things to come and could mean danger for Oregon and their national championship hopes. Michigan, are they the new Iowa? Because they beat Fresno State, but their offense was sluggish at best. I think they had an alarmingly conservative offense, and that was my big takeaway. They took very few shots downfield, but also kind of made sense because the few shots they did take, Davis Warren wasn't able to complete. A lot of overthrows, a lot of miscommunications with his receivers. And really, it looks like Michigan doesn't have a reliable receiving threat outside of tight end Colston Loveland, who is, I think, the best tight end in college football, but they need someone else to step up. And honestly, Davis Warren's performance Saturday made me wonder how bad Alex Orji is, because we all know how freakishly athletic he is. How bad is he at throwing the football that Davis Warren was able to beat him out? That was one of my takeaways. And this conservative approach that they're clearly going with Davis Warren, they're not using RPOs, options, quarterback reads at all. This is a straight downhill running team that's going to set up a few downfield shots. But really, this is looking as conservative as Iowa has the past few years. And Michigan's defense is great, and that formula could be good for 8 or 9 wins. But Michigan just simply won't be able to contend with Texas or Ohio State or any team that makes the college football playoff with that formula. Their quarterback and their offensive line play is just not good enough from what I saw in week 1. Michigan State, number 3, very undisciplined performance. That was my big takeaway from them. Aiden Childs, very hyped quarterback who I was really excited to see. He looked too desperate to try to make the big play. Play after play, was not playing within the offense. He was woefully inaccurate downfield. His footwork was a mess. I remember him chucking the ball downfield 5 or 6 times, and every time was a good 10 yards past his receiver. And I think he was trying to do almost too much with his legs. There was times where he should have just gone down, and he almost made a mess of himself trying to escape and extend the play longer than it really had to go. And it's not just Aiden Childs. As a team, Michigan State had 12 penalties for 140 yards, and there were a few other calls that were potential late hits or targeting calls that the flag wasn't thrown for, so it could have been a lot worse. All in all, I saw a really undisciplined performance from Michigan State, and it seemed to me like they thought they could come out of the gate with a lot of energy beating their chest, and that would be good enough to beat FAU, and they just were not good enough at the little things and the attention to detail, and that's why that game ended up being as close as it was. So I'm hoping this weekend against Maryland to see a little bit more discipline from both sides of the ball. Iowa, did they have an offensive rejuvenation? In their 40-0 win over Illinois State, they really didn't do anything crazy. All they did was incorporate some pre-snap motion and some RPOs, and just decided to not be overly conservative. They used the run game to open up some shots downfield, which McNamara was able to complete. They trusted their quarterback to go make some throws, and he was able to do it. I think Brian Ferentz's overly conservative approach the past few years is what's really doomed this offense, not the personnel. They do have some talent on this team. And Tim Lester, the new offensive coordinator, like I said, didn't do anything crazy. He just introduced some modern concepts, some pre-snap motion, and Iowa's offense, just like that, looked like a competent unit. I know I don't want to overreact to a game against Illinois State, but statistically, this was their best offensive game in 5 years. So yeah, I do want to overreact a little bit to that. Ohio State, despite their vanilla offensive game plan, Will Howard shined. Because I think with Ohio State, their 52-6 win over Akron, their defense is as good as advertised. We don't need to worry about that side of the ball until they go play Oregon in October. But the offense, I think their game plan going in was just very vanilla with the play calling. We didn't really see any options or RPOs, very few deep shots, no two-back sets featuring Travion and Quinshon. So I think it's clear Ohio State's trying to keep a lot to the, you know, close to their chest early on in the season. But even so, Will Howard, despite the vanilla game plan, showed off his arm talent and athleticism. He did not make a bad throw the entire game. His stats weren't eye-popping, but a lot of that was because of some drops and some smart throwaways. But Will Howard looked incredible, and he had an innate ability to maneuver the pocket, make throws on the run, and take off when he needed. There were a few plays where you could tell, yeah, this dude can run 20, 21 miles an hour, which is just such a weapon for Chip Kelly to have at the quarterback position. So, I mean, I'm sold on Will Howard. Again, after week one, I think he is more than capable of making this an elite offense once they decide to open it up and everyone gets their feet under them in a few weeks. Rutgers, Ethan Calliope-Manis looked like the answer, but does he have any help at wide receiver? They dominated Howard after a slow start. Their offensive line and ground game was great. Their defense did what they were supposed to against Howard. I thought Ethan Calliope-Manis was decisive, he was accurate, and he was mobile, showed off his athleticism. Drops and miscommunications from the Rutgers wide receivers really held them back. Demir Miller, their transfer in from the FCS, was really the only guy that made any plays. I thought this was going to be a much deeper unit, and they definitely have room to get better and improve on that connection they have with Ethan Calliope-Manis, because you do have to note that this is a brand new quarterback. He's only been with the program for a handful of months, but I was concerned with the play I saw out of Rutgers wide receivers. Minnesota. Max Brosmer and their simplistic offense is going to cost a great roster. Max Brosmer, their transfer quarterback, was bad. There's no way to sugarcoat it. He had a bad game. But the play calling didn't do him any favors either. I thought really watching that Minnesota game against North Carolina, Minnesota looked like the better team. I know they were, but they were running what looked like a high school offense. It was almost like they were just alternating between inside zone and some mesh plays. So they really need to find ways to get Daniel Jackson the ball, because the few times he was targeted, he was able to make some really impressive catches, and he drew a couple penalties, but Max Brosmer did not look to have really great arm talent. And if his first read wasn't there, he seemed very quick to try to bail out of the pocket and run, which is not a recipe for success, because he is not a great athlete by any means. Max Brosmer was disappointed by him, but like I said, play calling did him no favors, just an overly simplistic offense. And really, outside of that, outside of Max Brosmer and the play calling, I was really impressed with what I saw from Minnesota personnel-wise, and I think they do have a really great roster that's capable of winning 8 or 9 games and being a top 25 team this year. But like I said, a bad choice at a quarterback in the transfer portal and a simplistic offense might cost them this great roster. Wisconsin, it's the same story as last year. They trailed Western Michigan in the fourth quarter before rallying for a 28-14 win. Defense was great, looks a lot better than last year, but the offensive line struggled again. Phil Longo, their offensive coordinator, seemed to really refuse to just commit to the run game. Tyler Van Dyke threw the ball almost 40 times. He made a few bad decisions, but he mainly did what was asked of him, and it wasn't the reason that Wisconsin ended up in a dogfight with Western Michigan. And I really just want to see more of the old school Wisconsin. I want to see them utilize Van Dyke's legs, use a committee at running back, teach their tight ends how to run block, because they were responsible for a few short yardage failures. And I want to see them really use this run game to then set up some downfield shots that Phil Longo likes to take. this offense just isn't clicking. I don't get their identity. It does not look like the same old Wisconsin you expect. All in all, looked like the same story as last year, where they just can't control the line of scrimmage and they don't know what they're doing on offense. Illinois. Is Brett Bielema's defense back? When I think of a Brett Bielema coach team, I think defense first, and the past couple years for Illinois has been very disappointing on that side of the ball. Luke Altmyer and the offense loved what I saw to that side of the ball, but I frankly wasn't surprised. I was expecting a good outing from them in that game and throughout the season. The defense is what really caught my attention. They forced 4 turnovers. All of them were self-forced too, not like they were just bad mistakes by Illinois State. And the secondary is what really needed to step up after just getting picked apart last year and being one of the worst passing defenses in all of college football. And they answered the bell. Miles Scott, who is one of the best defensive backs in the Big Ten, he had a great game. Torrey Cox is a name that popped out to me. He played really well. And again, I know it's Illinois State. It's dangerous to overreact to 1 week, but Illinois' defense was really impressive. And I think Illinois as a team was one of the most pleasant surprises from week one. And finally, USC. De'Anton Lynn did it again. I talked about that hire of Lynn at defensive coordinator a lot this offseason and how much I liked it. He turned UCLA around from a bottom 15 defense to a top 15 defense in one season. And like I said, I love the hire this offseason, but I really did not think he could do it again. And I'm not saying USC is going to be a top 15 defense this season, but they certainly looked good enough to get them into the college football playoff. They are much improved and a lot farther ahead than I thought they would be in the opening weekend. Yeah, I didn't see any missed assignments. Secondary looked great. The lack of size up front was evident in a few stretches where LSU was really gashing them, but they also stepped up in several short yardage situations. And really from that defense, I saw a toughness and a resilience that has been lacking from them under Alex Grinch for the past few seasons. I think there was a lot of times watching USC on defense the past few years where it just seemed like they gave up and they're like, yeah, we're just not clicking on this drive. We're going to give up a touchdown. And we didn't see any of that. There were plenty of drives where it seemed like LSU had some momentum and USC buckled down with their back against their own end zone. And that was really great to see. They passed their first assignment with flying colors. Really impressed with what De'Anton Lynn has done with his USC defense already. So those were my quick hitters from week one. And now we can turn our attention to week two. And I think a lot of the best games in this college football slate this weekend is coming from the Big Ten. We got 6 games that I'm really excited for that I want to talk about. And I'm going to go through what I'm looking for in each game and then give you my pick. First up, Michigan versus Texas. And from an analysis perspective, I'm really only concerning myself with when Michigan has the football because I know how great this Michigan defense is. They're going to be a top 10, top 15 unit all season long. And I know they will do their part with helping Michigan hang in there and at the very least keeping this a close game into the second half. I think they will do a good job of confusing Quinn Ewers and forcing some stops and slowing down that Texas offense for a while. But my concern is this Michigan offense and how they are going to move the ball against Texas. Because their offensive line, I mean, they started to get a push in the run game later in the game, but this was the worst game a Michigan offensive line has had since the COVID season. Donovan Edwards, who's supposed to be their bell cow running back, had less than 3 yards a carry. Kalel Mullings, who might now be their starting running back, he had a nice game averaging 6 yards a carry. Blake Corum's not back there, and there are not 3-foot-wide holes for Donovan Edwards to hit so then he can outrun the rest of the defense for one of those signature 60-yard runs he has in big games. That doesn't seem to be happening this year, at least not against quality teams. So I think this puts even more stress on a passing game who I think is in worse shape than I expected them to be in the opening weekend. So I know they want to go the conservative approach. They're going to try to possess the ball, keep it out of Quinn Ewers' hands, limit the number of possessions, and win an ugly game, have a few calculated deep passes, and maybe a few trick plays under their sleeve. That's the way they're going to approach this game. But even with that, at some point, Davis Warren is going to have to step up and make a big-time completion. At some point, he's going to have to step up and make an accurate throw downfield. Or at some point, a wide receiver not named Colston Loveland, who's a tight end, is going to have to come up with a big-time play and a clutch grab. And I know I'm overreacting maybe a little bit to 1 week of football, but I don't see Michigan's offense in a condition to be able to pull that off. So really, my perspective with Michigan, I know this offense will improve throughout the season, but the way it's in right now, I am in no way expecting Michigan to win this game. I'm just concerned with them being able to keep it close, Because if they get the doors blown off of them in their own house in week two, I don't care how many Michigan fans want to sit back and say, oh, we won the national championship last year. I'm happy with anything, even if we go 7-5 or 8-4. Because there's plenty of fans who have that perspective right now. But as soon as they have to sit through an ass beating on national television, I think their tune will change a little bit and it'll get a little bit more desperate. This offense will get better throughout the season. I think the offense that plays Ohio State at the end of the season is going to be a lot better than the offense that Texas is playing this weekend. But regardless, if they get their doors blown off of them, if they can't pass for 200 yards, if they can't put up 20 points and hang in this game, I don't see them being able to improve as much as they would have to then contend with Ohio State on the road at the end of the season. And that's really the name of the game. And if they lose badly to Texas, they'll probably have to beat Ohio State in order to get into the college football playoff. So my pick for this game is Texas. And again, I have no expectations for Michigan to win this game. I'm just hoping they can keep it tight, because that would give me some optimism for, you know, for this formula being able to be a winning formula for them in the long run. But I certainly have my doubts. The next game I'm really excited for, though, is a rivalry game, which we love to see this early in the season, Iowa versus Iowa State. And I'll be frank with you, I think Iowa is the better team at every single position group. Heading into the season, I would have said every position group except for the quarterback, but I was honestly pleasantly surprised with what I saw from Cade McNamara. There was a lot of negative reviews coming out of his performance in fall camp, and now reflecting on it, that might have just been because Iowa's defense is so good. He's got some pass catchers. We know the talent that they have in the backfield led by Caleb Johnson, but he's also got some pass catchers around him. Luke Lachey is a really great tight end. Reese Vanderzee, a true freshman who came out of nowhere, 5 catches for 66 yards and a touchdown in the opener. That connection could be a game changer. And they still have Caleb Johnson, who's a really great athlete. And the offensive line is one of the most experienced offensive lines in the country. And you could tell when you watched the game on Saturday. And they're 2.5-point favorites. I know I wasn't talking about betting in this podcast, but I'm shocked at how low that line is. And I have expectations for this offense now. I think everyone's expecting this Iowa State game to be like a 12-9 sort of game, an ugly, low-scoring game without any touchdowns. But from what I saw on Saturday with Iowa's offense, I believe that they are capable of generating big plays, of beating teams on the ground and through the air, and putting some stress on opposing defenses with those RPOs that we saw, because Caleb Johnson is a really good running back and he's got good backups behind him. Because this offensive line is so big and so experienced, they are able to run downhill at you. And those RPOs we saw, those delayed releases we saw from Cade McNamara in the passing game, I think generates one-on-one matchups, and I think they do have receivers to make some plays. So really what I'm looking for is Iowa's offense to not necessarily put up 40 or even 30 points again, but to be a team that puts stress on the Iowa State defense and proves that they can do this against a team from the power conferences. If their offense resorts to back to what we saw last year, then I will throw the red flags up for Iowa. But I have a feeling that they're going to surprise some people. People are assuming because it was Illinois State, they did what they were supposed to. But I think people who are thinking that way don't understand just how horrible this offense has been. They've already made insane strides. I want to see them continue it against Iowa State. The next game I'm excited for, and I think it's the game I am most excited to see this weekend, is Nebraska and Colorado. In the most respectful way, Colorado is an unserious football team. Travis Hunter, I think, is well-deserving of a top-5 pick in the draft. But Shedeur Sanders, I think, is the most overrated quarterback in the country. There were many underthrows in that game, several missed throws, and a lot of Travis Hunter's catches were insane catches by him, where he had to overcome a bad throw from Shedeur. If there's anything you need to know about Shedeur Sanders, it's that they had an opportunity to run the ball, kill the clock, and end the game without getting a first down against North Dakota State, and said he called an audible for a deep ball, and it was wide open for a touchdown, and he underthrows him by 5 yards, and that gives North Dakota State a chance at going to win the game. And no one's talking about that, but that's the kind of quarterback he is. I think he's not a great decision maker and not consistently accurate. He's a great athlete, can extend plays. And then for the rest of the Colorado roster, I think it was evident against North Dakota State, the roster as a whole is closer to a top-tier FCS program than it is to a contender in a power conference. They are just being elevated that much by Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. And so while you have that shit show, for lack of a better word, going on at Colorado, where I think the season is going to unravel very similarly for them as it did last year. Nebraska seems to be ahead of schedule. Dylan Raiola, I don't know what you can say for that opening performance other than just tip your cap at him. As a true freshman, he just looked so comfortable, made a handful of throws that really made you raise your eyebrows, throws that looked like they were made by a guy who's getting ready to enter the draft next year, not someone who is 18 years old. Nebraska dominated the line of scrimmage like you expected them to, and I expect them to do this against Colorado as well. They get this game at home, under the lights. It's a very underrated rivalry that the people of Nebraska are really passionate about. You know it's going to be a tough environment. And, you know, on paper, Nebraska is far and away the better team. And if they just play up to their potential, I don't see a reason why Nebraska shouldn't blow the doors off of Colorado. You know, they could keep it close for a while, but this is a three-possession game in my mind, just from a top-to-bottom talent perspective. But so what I'm really concerned about is, honestly, Dylan Raiola. Despite that opening game performance, how does he, an 18-year-old starting his second collegiate game, how does he react to playing a team that has as much notoriety as Colorado? How does he react to playing under the lights on national television and arguably the game of the weekend? How does he react if he throws an interception to open the game and the crowd gets a little uneasy? Will he be able to overcome some hardships that are bound to happen at some point in the game? Or does he crumble? Or does he act like a true freshman? And so that's really what I'm looking for. Because if he goes out there and plays like he did last weekend, I don't care that he's going up against a team that, outside of Travis Hunter, would probably be the worst defense in the Big Ten. If he's able to seize the moment and play with poise and not play like a true freshman in this moment, then watch out for Nebraska. I mean, because their team is really good. Isaiah Nair, he stepped up at receiver. They got a stable of running backs. Their defense is arguably one of the 10 best in the country. Like, I kept saying this offseason about how I thought year three was going to be the big jump. But if Dylan Raiola is, you know, this level-headed guy who's going to come in and play like a fifth-year senior as an 18-year-old, then yeah, they are capable of 9, maybe 10 wins, maybe crashing the CFP this year. Nebraska is my obvious pick, and we'll cover this game in our Big Ten betting guide. I personally am probably going to put a pretty penny on Nebraska to beat Colorado or to cover against Colorado. I'm really keying in on Dylan Raiola and just how mentally he handles this moment. And another game I'm really excited for this weekend, and an underrated matchup and a game that I think is going to be really fun, is Illinois and Kansas. Two dynamic offenses and two defenses that last year really struggled but got off to really hot starts this year. And two, I think, of the most underrated quarterbacks in the country. Jalen Daniels for Kansas played his first game in almost a year last weekend. And he was a little bit rusty, but he's a mobile guy, didn't really use his legs much last week. I think he's going to be much more in a better groove this weekend. Luke Altmaier, if he was playing in the SEC, you would hear his name being talked about on ESPN. But because he plays for Illinois, he's a relative unknown, but he played like one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten last week. And Illinois' offense, I talked about it all offseason, how I thought they were going to be a really exciting watch. Their offensive line is much improved, much more experienced. Aiden Loffrey and Caden Feagan looked like a dynamic duo at running back last weekend. Pat Bryant, you know, he showed the kind of receiver he is on Saturday. He's one of the Big Ten's best. Malik Elzey, he was a name I told you guys to keep an eye out for. He came up with a couple big catches. Like, this is a complete offense that I think can put up points. And their defense is really my concern, but like I said, they passed their first test, and I think they can give Jalen Daniels a little bit of trouble. But Kansas is a team that can beat you through the air and on the ground with Devin Neal, who's one of the country's best running backs. So I really think this is an evenly matched game. It is played at Illinois. It's a sold-out crowd being played under the lights. So for that reason, I give Illinois a slight advantage. I'm picking Illinois to pull off the upset against Kansas. From a fan perspective in this game, I'm most excited to see the offenses because I think this will be a high-scoring, back-and-forth game. But from an analytical perspective, I'm really keying in on Illinois' defense, particularly their defensive front. I think their secondary kind of proved what I needed to see. Miles Scott, I mentioned his name before, he is leading a much-improved secondary. I think they can limit this Kansas passing attack. I'm now really interested to see how their defensive front holds up against a dynamic running attack where they have to defend both the quarterback and the running back. They obviously don't have Johnny Newton anymore anchoring that defensive front. So I'm curious to see if they're able to step up or if it is going to be just a shootout where it's on Luke Altmaier to go down, throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns, something like that. Something he is, I think, capable of doing. And I think Illinois can win that way. But if they don't have to, if they can limit Kansas a little bit and win in a lower scoring affair, again, I think that bodes really well for Illinois as far as their chances of competing the rest of the season and their chances of getting back to a bowl game. The fifth game I am excited for is Oregon and Boise State. Boise State was a trendy pick to make the college football playoff as the fifth highest ranked conference champion, but they came out of the gate pretty rough last week. Ashton Giante, their all-star running back, really carried them throughout the game and was their offense. He proved that he is a legitimate Heisman contender, but their defense gave up 46 points, almost 500 yards of total offense to Georgia Southern. And now they get an Oregon team who is looking to light up the scoreboard. I think their offensive line is going to try to come out of the gate much more aggressively and play with a lot more passion than we saw last weekend. So I think this is an upset opportunity if Oregon's offensive line continues to struggle. But if they come out and play like I expected them to be capable of playing, then there is no reason that Oregon shouldn't be able to put up like 60 points on Boise State. I'm really excited to see Ashton Giante match up against this Oregon defense. An Oregon defense that, like I said, did play very well, but did also fall asleep on a few plays and give up some long plays to Idaho, which allowed that game to go into the fourth quarter. So my pick for this is Oregon by a lot, because I am expecting this offensive line to play like I know they're capable of playing. But I think we'll tell pretty early on in that game. If we get through the first quarter and Oregon's still struggling to get a push on that offensive line, then I think we could have a really fun game ahead of ourselves, because Boise State's defense, don't have a lot of faith in them, but they're able to put up points. And I think if they're able to keep this a one or two possession game into the fourth quarter, I think they're capable of generating a few big plays against Oregon and maybe even pulling off the upset. Not calling it. My pick is definitely Oregon by a lot, but we'll know after the first quarter whether or not this is a game that we really need to watch until the fourth quarter. And the final game that I'm excited for is our first conference matchup of the 2024 season. It's Maryland and Michigan State, and it's two teams who I think had polar opposite starts to their season. Despite them both being 1-0, it's a much different 1-0 feeling for both teams. Michigan State, I mentioned it at the top of the show, how undisciplined they played. They had a 16-0 lead, ended up only winning 16-10. Aiden Childs completed 44% of his passes for less than 5 yards an attempt, had 2 interceptions, overthrew a lot of his guys, didn't do a whole lot on the ground. Defense was the most pleasant surprise of the day, had those 12 penalties. But as a unit, they were a lot more cohesive. Much fewer missed assignments. Guys weren't running 20 yards wide open like we've seen out of that secondary a lot over the past few years. So I think that alone is enough to have some confidence for Michigan State going through the rest of the season. But I was just so impressed with Maryland this past weekend. I know it was UConn. Top to bottom, this just was a great team win. Billy Edwards, I pegged as a run-first type quarterback because that's mainly been the way they've used him when he's stepped in for Taulia Tagovailoa over the past few years. But he looked like a pure, polished pocket passer. He had a strong arm, was consistently accurate, had some downfield shots, but was also quick with his decisions. And he just was able to get the ball out to the litany of playmakers that Maryland does have on the outside, because they have a very underrated group of skill position players that are better than most teams in the Big Ten. Roman Hemby, he is still one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. Caden Prather and Ty Felton, one of the best wide receiver duos, dare I say, in the nation. Their offensive line looked a lot better than I expected. I know it was UConn, but I had very low expectations for this offensive line given the turnover they've had and given the play they've had over the past few seasons. But they dominated the line of scrimmage, and their defense played really well too. Still a little bit concerned about that secondary, but going up against Michigan State, Aiden Childs couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So if there's one area on the defense that I'm okay being shaky on heading into a home matchup against Michigan State, it's the passing game. Let Aiden Childs try to beat you. So what I'm looking for from Michigan State in this game is just more discipline. I want to see Aiden Childs try to play within the offense and be okay with a 5-yard check down and just deliver that ball accurately, rather than being so desperate to make a big play, rather than seeing one-on-one coverage on the outside and thinking you have to go take a shot. I don't want to see that from Aiden Childs. I want to see a more conservative approach, and I want to see him just take what the defense gives you. And for Maryland, I just want to see more of the same. Can they dominate the trenches again like they did against UConn? Can Billy Edwards really stretch the field and be a difference maker with his arm and his legs? And can they shut down this Michigan State offense again? Because if they do all of that, all of a sudden, Maryland, I think I will change my tune on Maryland very quickly. I was low on them coming into the season. If their offense is able to do what they did last week against Michigan State, I think they could be a really dangerous team and a team that no one wants to play this season. My pick for this game, though, is Maryland. And I don't think they'll be particularly close. I think Michigan State's defense will force a couple turnovers. I think they'll be able to keep it close, at least a one possession game heading into the second half. But I just think this Maryland offense is too complete. I think there's too many ways they're able to beat you. And even though they're breaking in a new quarterback, this is his third year with the program. He has a handful of starts under his belt. Roman Hemby has been around forever, and their receiver room is very veteran. Mike Locksley, you know, is one of the longer tenured coaches in the Big Ten now. There is cohesiveness in this program, and I don't think they have to worry about the hiccups and getting in rhythm with each other like Michigan State does. And that's why I think that this game is going to go really well for Maryland and really poorly for Michigan State. I'm taking the Terps to beat Michigan State in our lone Big Ten matchup of week two. And that'll do it for this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I've been your host, Sean. Hope everyone has a great week and is geared up for another tremendous weekend of college football. Make sure you check out our website, thefloorslap.com, where we will have that betting guide coming out Thursday morning. And follow us on Twitter, at thefloorslap. I appreciate anyone and everyone that's out there listening right now and cannot wait to get through the rest of the college football season with you.